ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य concepts within the Bhagavad Gita. By knowing only we can enter into the study of Bhagavad Gita. If you know some basic concepts of the Bhagavad Gita, then it's very easy to study the Bhagavad Gita. So now we'll start our course with a very important question. The question is that so many handouts have been distributed about this course, so much of advertisement has been done about this course, but why only you came? Why not others? This is how we start this course. What is there within you which brought you here? What is not there within others which made them choose not to join this course? You may say, oh, they are very busy. Are you not busy? You are also busy. But still you came. There may be so many reasons for you to come here, but there may be a very important and underlying reason behind it. That is a desire, burning desire within all of you, that I want to know. And this is known as inquisitiveness, or the desire to inquire. I want to know this Bhagavad Gita, and heard about this Bhagavad Gita, it's there being read around the world. And this book Bhagavad Gita is well respected around the world. And people, even in the Western countries, they are accepting this science of Bhagavad Gita. It has been 5,000 years since this Bhagavad Gita has been spoken, and still its glory is spreading around the world. More and more people are accepting it. What is there within it? I heard people read this Bhagavad Gita and then their life gets transformed. I heard about it. What is there in it? We just heard this Bhagavad Gita is a great discussion which happened 5,000 years back between Krishna and Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. What exactly is it all about? So there was a burning desire, and especially you heard about this Hare Krishnas. If I go to New York, I find Hare Krishnas. If I go to down south Australia, I find Hare Krishnas. I go far east, still I find Hare Krishnas. I go to Russia, the northernmost point, still I find these Hare Krishnas. Who are they? Their basic literature is this Bhagavad Gita. I heard that this Bhagavad Gita has transformed the lives of many. It has not only transformed the lives of many, it has transgressed even the nationalities of the people they identify with, the religion which they identify themselves with, the caste they identify themselves with. So without any distinction of any nationality or creed or any other caste or something like that, this Bhagavad Gita is revered and accepted by everyone. So what is the speciality? I want to know. Whether I may accept it or not, that is different. But I want to know it. So this is there within your heart. That is why you came here. I want to know. That is inquiry. And don't underestimate this quality which you have. The Vedanta Sutras, which were written by Vyasa after writing all the Vedic literatures. After writing all the Vedas, Vyasa at the end, he wrote one book called Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta means, Anta means end. At the end of Vedas, whatever was written is known as Vedanta Sutras. The end of the Vedas, which is Vedanta Sutra, which contains the summary of all the Vedas. The first epistle, the first sutra says, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Atha means now. What is the meaning of now? Now we have two legs, at least. We have crossed so many species of four-legged insects and now came to the human form of life. Now what is the responsibility of accepting the human form of life? Now, since we got human form of life, therefore what we are supposed to do? Enquire. Jigyasa. One has to enquire. Enquire into the higher realms of existence. Yes, we do enquire. Definitely the whole world is based on inquiry, isn't it? We enquire what is the position of the stock market, what is the latest movie, where is the best restaurant in Colombo, as soon as somebody lands, where is the best restaurant in Colombo, you would ask, where is the best place to stay, what are the places to stay here. So everything is based on inquiry, isn't it? When you, even somebody goes to the doctor inquires, what is your problem? The whole world is based on somebody asks some questions and somebody answers this. But human life is not meant for inquiry into the normal things, ordinary things which people are doing these days. Human life is meant for inquiring into the higher realms of existence. Generally, all of our inquiries in this world are basically restricted to four things. You know what are they? Ahar nidra bhavitnamcha samanyamita pashupinaranam. Dharmo hi ekodipo visheshu dharmena vihina pashupin samana. We generally inquire what these four things are. Where do I get better food? If you see the list of all the things to visit in different places around the world, it is basically based on food. Even somebody wants to inquire where will I get a better job, he is just thinking of what? So that I can get better money, better place, so that I can eat. So, ahar, nidra. So, I want to sleep. Where will I make a nice sleeping arrangement, a staying arrangement for myself and my family? Ahar, nidra, bhaya. Once you are secure with food and your ahar, nidra, your sleeping facility, then you think of security. Now, what is the security? I want to have a bank balance. I want to be in a place where we remain secure. The country thinks of the security by having the military. In this way, ahar, nidra, bhaya, maitunamcha. Maituna means family life. So then people are concerned about family life. So I need to be with my wife, my children. We need to be happy. Social situations, friends, meetings, functions, religious functions, social functions like that. So in this way, our whole existence is just based on these four things. Ahar, nidra, bhaya, maitunamcha. But Mahabharata says that if our whole life is just based on these four things, and inquiring about these four things, the fundamental requirements of our body, then what makes us different from animals? How are we different from animals? Because animals are also into those four things. If you see our dog also, if we also eat, the pig also, if we also eat, you may say, no, we are eating something very wonderful. We cook our food, we sit on a dining table, we have some etiquettes. You see the dogs, they quarrel on the road, and they just, they're dogs. But the point is, ultimately the activity is the same. Just there is some sophistication in the activity that doesn't make us something different. Maximum to maximum, you can call ourselves to be sophisticated animals if our activities are just restricted to these four things. Suppose you see a pig or a dog or some animal, it is eating. When it is eating, it is so satisfied. The satisfaction which it, the animal is getting out of eating is the same what we are getting out of eating. The activity is the same. Nidra. After sleeping, who knows where we are sleeping? If we get a deep sleep, though, most of us even don't have that. So if we get some sleep, after sleeping, we don't know where we are sleeping. You find the dogs and the cats, they're also sleeping. They don't have big arrangement. Just imagine, for us to sleep, you need to have a nice, wonderful arrangement. They get sleep anywhere. I think they are in a better position, isn't it? Especially if you see the problems which the human society has, the animals don't have it. One thing is for sure, the animals don't have any financial problem, isn't it? They don't have to pay their EMIs. They don't have to do so many things. Neither you find in the animal society they have family problem, isn't it? There are so many problems which the humans have made it up, and the animals don't have it. Nidra. We make a nice, wonderful apartment, nice facility to sleep, but you don't get sleep. On the other hand, you find animals, they are sleeping peacefully. But whatever it may be, the activity is the same. Nidra. Dogs also sleep, the cats also sleep, you are also sleeping. Sometimes it is said that the polar bear sleeps for 6 months, continuously sleeps, 6 months it sleeps. We cannot get 6 hours of proper sleep, what is because 6 months? Nidra. Biosecurity, you find in the animal kingdom also, you have this feeling of security. If the dogs from another street come to this street to bark, I don't know whether you have that kind of thing here, but in India, in small cities, in small towns you have, the street dogs are there. If other street dogs come to this street, these dogs start barking at them and throw them out. Same thing happens. Suppose the military of the other country comes, this military barks at them with the guns. That is the only difference. As soon as you land in the airport, in a sophisticated way, the immigration officer, he says to you that, who are you? Where do you come from? Why are you coming? Isn't it? So, the same thing. Nidra, bhaya means security, a feeling of, and I want to be secure, that is there. Mekunamcha, family life. The animals also have it. You may say, no, in the human society, as parents, we take care of the child. You see how the calf is taking care of the cow. You see, now the ox, they take care of their children. Even the pigs, they take care of their children, they feed milk. So it is there, the family life is also there in the animal kingdom. Now the question arises is, what does it make, what does a human have speciality? What is the speciality of human being? How can we call ourselves as a human being? If the activities of the humans and animals are the same, is it that we are some sophisticated humans? The Veda says, the scriptures say that, if our activities are restricted just for these four things, nidra, bhaya, maitun, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, then we are called vipada pashu. Pashu means animal. Vipada means what? Two-legged. A two-legged animal. We cannot call ourselves a human being. Just see this quality of inquiry that is so powerful that qualifies us to be human. The very fact that you want to know, I just want to know Bhagavad Gita. Just for example, you see a board, somebody sees a board of, there's a Bhagavad Gita class going on in this particular place, at this time. A dog also walks, it also may see the same board. And a human may also see the same board, but the human starts thinking, manushya, manishinaha, one who has brains, one who has a thinking capacity, is called a human. Well, the animals don't think. because they behave instinctively. That is the difference between a human and animal. You go to somebody's house. As soon as you just enter the house or just press the calling bell, the dog starts barking at you. The dog doesn't inquire, who are you, where did you come from? Whereas a human inquires and then reacts. That is the difference. Now these days we are interested in living. We know, we are not concerned, we are not thinking on how to live, what is the purpose of life, etc., etc. We don't think about it. We just live. But the animal is also just living. So there is a distinction between a human and animal. So being a human, we have a high responsibility. What is a high responsibility? That is to inquire. Adhatu brahmajikyasa. Inquiry into higher realms of existence. That is the first and the foremost responsibility of human being. Samanya vedat pashupatnarana. We are not against eating, sleeping, meditating, defending. The body has some requirements. It has to be fulfilled. But that is not the purpose. That is not the whole purpose of human life. There is a higher purpose for it. That needs to be inquired. What is the purpose of human life? What is the goal of human life? This is the first inquiry. Like when you go to some place, there's a purpose. When you get something, purchase something from the market, there's a purpose. Then what is the purpose and the goal of human life? When we talk of inquiry, there are so many things to inquire about. But all the inquiries boil down to two inquiries. From number one, the goal or the purpose of life. This is the first inquiry everybody has to do. Being born as a human being is the first thing which you need to ask. What is the goal of life? What is the purpose of life? Yes, I am living. But what is the purpose? I was traveling in Bombay. In Bombay, the builder lobby is very strong. They are very expert in advertising their societies, their constructions and all. The very interesting advertisement I saw. There is a huge billboard holding. In that, there had mentioned in one side, nice, wonderful buildings with lot of amenities, swimming pool, etc., etc. Another side, they had very shabby buildings which had cracks in them, not well maintained, no amenities, etc. And then a very striking and interesting sentence was written there. It was, stop existing, start living. That means you people staying in these flats, you're just existing. But if you really want to live, you buy a flat in our society from us. Then you'll start living. You have nice amenities there. Very interesting statement. Anybody would think, yes, I'm just existing. I want to purchase and start living. But now my question is, it is very good that you are interested in living. But more than living, we should be interested in leading our life. It is not just living which is important. Because Bhagavatam says, Taravah kim na jeevanti, vastra kim na shashvantita, na khadyanti na mehanti na kim pasave gramopare. Very interesting verse in the Bhagavatam, second canto, it says that are the trees not living? Taravah kim na jeevanti? Kim na jeevanti? Aren't these trees not living? Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya, used to give an example of a banyan tree in Calcutta in botanical gardens. He used to say, this tree is there for more than 2000 years. Only the remnants of the tree are there, that itself is so huge. It so happened that once I had been to botanical gardens and saw. But they are living. But what is the use of their life? They don't think that there is some purpose of life. So just living is not the goal of life. Somehow it has happened because of modernization, because of so much of city life, so much of westernization. What has happened to us? We are just interested in making our living comfortable. But what has happened? In the pursuit of making our life more comfortable, we are making our life more miserable. We don't have time for our family these days. The mothers have to work. They have to go for work. They cannot give time to their children because they have to pay the EMIs for the flats which they buy. The expenses have gone up. On the name of comforts, comfortable living, we have even forgotten what is living. Though living is not the goal of life. Reading is the goal of life. We have messed up our living also on the name of comfortable living. It's a fact, especially in Bombay, in many metros in India. I don't know much about Colombo, but this is a fact. And it is not very far. Those kind of situations are going to come everywhere in the world. Even small towns, they are being targeted by the consumerism and modernization on the name of comforts. Even living has become a very difficult thing. Then what to speak of reading? Everybody wants to live their life happily. Everybody wants a very comfortable life. But we have messed up our life such a great extent that even the animals, they have better life than humans. Just imagine to get some food and a place to stay. How much time we had to spend in our offices? We had to spend long hours in our offices. In work, practically 8 hours, 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours. Those who are in software industry in different places, they spend so much of time just to make their living. Though living is not the goal of life. That is why Bhagavatam says, Tarava kimna jivanti, vastra kimna shashvantyuta. You see, I am breathing. Even the bellows, the blacksmith, they breathe. Na khadyanti na mehanti na kim pashave gramopare. The animals which are there in the outskirts of the villages, pashave gramopare, there they also eat and they also pass through. And we are also doing the same thing. So there is a higher purpose for human life. Our human life and human intelligence is given not just for living life. Our human intelligence, the speciality of the human being is that there is a goal of life. That is why leading comes into picture. When you are living, there is no goal. When you are just driving without a goal, it is just driving. You are not leading yourself to a particular place. So what is important is not living life. The importance is leading our life. And leading happens only when you have a goal. So that is why we should inquire, what is the goal? What is the purpose of human life? This is the first inquiry. The human intelligence is designed for this purpose. But when you use this human intelligence for just ahar, nidra, bhayamethun, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then it is like this. You may very well use the human intelligence for lower purposes and maybe achieve some kind of success. But the purpose of human intelligence is not that. Like on your birthday party or some kind of thing, your friend or your relative or somebody comes to your house and gives you a gift. You see what is the gift? You open in front of them only. You are so happy to receive a beautiful pen. It's a golden pen. And then this foolish person who have received this, he takes the pen out, removes the cap, and then starts scratching his head because he has some itching sensation. Just imagine how the person who had given the gift would feel. Definitely, the pen can be used for scratching your head. But that is not the purpose of the pen. The purpose of the pen is to write some nice poetry. The same way, God has given us human intelligence, special intelligence. The purpose of this intelligence is to inquire into the absolute truth. Though it can be used for lower purposes, that is not the goal. As much as the friend who gave you or gave that person the pen would feel bad when it is used for lower purposes, in the same way, God feels very bad. When the intelligence given by Him, it is being used for lower purposes. Definitely, the lower purposes of eating, sleeping, mating, defending has to be addressed. Because the body is there, the body has certain demands and it has to be fulfilled. But that is not the purpose. Like sometimes you travel in railway, in train. In the train, you get a reserved compartment, reserved seat, everything is very comfortable, air conditioned, everything first class, everything is there. But the purpose is not that. The purpose is to get down at the proper destination. You get into the train, but you don't know where to get down. What is the goal? And you're so happy because you got a reserved seat. It is foolishness. Though we have a very comfortable situation in our life, we have our own house, air conditioning is there, and anything, whatever you want, can be got because you are in such a position financially and socially. But still, just having some comfortable situation in this world is not the purpose of human life. There is some higher purpose that has to be achieved, and that can only happen when we inquire about it. Somehow, the education system, the social situations have made our intelligence so subdued. Though in the childhood, when the child is sent to the nursery class, he has been taught. I don't know whether this kind of rhymes are taught in Sri Lanka or not. Definitely, these rhymes are taught to children in India when they are sent to the kindergarten. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. So, but what happens is, as they grow up, they don't wonder about anything. We just wander about, searching out, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. We never wonder. Just see how the plants grow, how the sun is rising every day in the east. It doesn't take a single casual leave also. We never wonder about these things. We are so far from nature. We are just interested in making our ends meet and wandering around the world just thinking where I can get better facility for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That is why the first and the foremost question or the inquiry being born as a human is what? We should inquire into what is the goal of life. You may say, oh, this is all too philosophical for me. Talk something very practical. Now you people with saffron and shaved head, I have seen, you don't understand our problems. We have so many problems, you only talk about goal of life and something very esoteric things, which is not my agenda now. I'll think about later. You may talk about like this. The second question is very interesting, which we all have to inquire. The first may be too philosophical. The first may be not a very emergency need for you. You may not experience the emergency in asking this, what is the purpose and the goal of life. But the second question, everybody has to inquire. You know what is the question? What is the inquiry? That is, in spite of all my endeavors to become happy, why am I suffering? This is very close to heart. This nobody can reject it. I don't want to inquire why am I suffering. But everybody has to inquire why am I suffering. Rather, in spite of all my endeavors to become happy, I am suffering more. The more I try to become happy, I am suffering more. Now somebody may say, you people are very negative. Why are you asking? Why should I ask question why am I suffering? Yes, I am suffering, but I'll ask question how I can become happy. Rather, everybody wants to become happy. It is said and accepted by all the philosophers around the world. That is, the driving force of all the actions in this world is happiness. Anybody, whatever he does in this world, he does it with an expectation that I would be happy. You may say, no, we are trying to work hard so that I can get money. You are trying to get money because you expect that once I get this thing, I'll purchase this thing, I'll do this thing so that I can be happy. So we're all trying to be happy. But we are doing a big blunder. Without knowing the cause of suffering, if you try to become happy, it is like taking a medicine without knowing the disease. If you go to the chemist shop and then try out different medicines without diagnosing the problem, what will happen? You aggregate your problem. What does the doctor do as soon as you go there? The first thing the doctor does is diagnose the disease. Then he gives the appropriate medicine. All our pursuits for happiness in this world is exactly like this. Without diagnosing our problem, what is the cause of suffering? We are trying to find out different remedies for it. Some people may think, oh, let me go for a long holiday, then I'll be happy. Then you go there, feel bored and come back. And then they think, no, let me go to this movie, it's very exciting. maybe this will solve this, by this I'll be happy. So you go there and watch the movie, you come out more depressed because your life is exactly the life of a person who is suffering there. No, I will do this thing, I will do this thing. In this way we are searching for so many ways and means of becoming happy without knowing why am I suffering. There is even two questions here. One is, how I can become happy and what is the cause of suffering? An intelligent person would first find out the cause of suffering. He would not think of how I can become happy. That is a fundamental problem with everyone in this world. It is not just one or two people. You go to any corner of the world, whether it is high class civilized people or in uncivilized, anywhere you go, the fundamental problem is that they are trying to become happy without knowing the cause of suffering. And that is why, in spite of all our endeavors to become happy, we are suffering more and more. You really think your parents are more happy than you are. And our children are suffering more than we suffered. When I see these children going to the schools and they are burdened with so much of examination pressure, I think of myself when I was studying third standard, I was not even knowing the spelling of exam. So happy. But we all cleared exam, everything happened, life went on. But the amount of pressure which the present day children are facing, it is like they are told, if you don't get marks, like your life is mess, you cannot live. I still remember there was one boy who passed the 12th standard. Recently this happened. He got 90% in 12th standard. And he had to prepare for entrance examination and he could not qualify for it. And for that, he went into so much of depression that his parents took him to so many different places. Somebody told, you go and meet Kamal Lochan Das, you know, he may try to do something. So then his family came along with this boy. Then I was inquiring, talking to them. This boy who got 90%, just because of some reason, the reason was he was not well during the examination. That is why he could not clear it. And to went to such a depression, he only speaks one sentence. What will happen to me? 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 Just imagine what is the condition. You may say, oh, that was with the one specific one boy only. No. Like that, how many cases? You don't know. And it's spreading like virus. Because so much of pressure has been put on the people, on the students. That is how we find that on the name of becoming happy, we are suffering more and more. Why? Because we don't know the root cause of our suffering. That is why we should inquire into two questions. Two inquiries, two prime inquiries in life. Number one, what is it? Goal of life. Number two, the cause of suffering. There's a nice interesting story about happiness. It's like a story which everybody remembers. Even after attending this course, after 3 years later, people remember, oh, Prabhupada, I like this story very much. The story is of a donkey. This donkey was working very hard every day. And the dhobi, or the washerman, the donkey it was, he was extracting so much work every day, but only used to feed dry grass to the donkey. One day, donkey thought, until unless today I get a carrot, because I like the carrot very much, I will not go forward. Today is strike. And the dhobi bought all the washerman bought all the clothes, the dry clothes, and put on the donkey, ready clothes. So the donkey had to carry all the clothes to the riverside, to the cart. So the donkey did not move. Dhobi, he took a stick and started beating the donkey. Go further. Donkey did not go further. Then the dhobi, the washerman, he understood. I need to do something. Today the donkey is on strike. So I need to give a carrot to the donkey because the carrot liked likes carrot very much. She brought a carrot and tied the carrot to one tip of the stick with a dangle like a carrot with a thread, and he tied the stick to the back of the donkey so that the carrot was dangling just in front of the mouth of the donkey, just 1 foot ahead. Donkey thought, my strike is successful today. One step ahead, I'll get the carrot. One step ahead, the donkey put his carrot also went one step ahead. Donkey thought, hey, what is this? Maybe my there's some problem with my eyesight, I suppose. One more step, I'll get the carrot. So that foolish donkey, thinking, one more step, I'll get the carrot. It continued its journey and it went to the cart, to the riverside. As usual, the washerman took all the clothes, kept it down, took the stick and took the carrot and kept it in his pocket before the return journey. So this is what is all our life. We always think, one more step. Wait for 2 years, I am solving everything. After that, life will be very happy. No, no, just wait, one more year, all my problems will be solved. Few years back, one old man came, who was 65. Yeah, I was telling him, you're already old, why didn't you take up some responsible services in the temple? Your children are there, they will take care of all these things. And he told, don't worry, I have planned. Give me 2 more years. I will solve all my problems. And just you tell me wherever you want me to come, I will come. I will be your assistant. Whole life will be for Krishna only. Then I told him, it took 65 years of hard work to solve your problem. Still you want 2 more years to solve your problems? When you are young, when you are energetic, when all the assets you had, with all those things you could not solve the problems of life, still you are asking 2 more years, what is the guarantee? So we are all in this illusion that just few more days, that's all, few more years. Once my children are settled, then I will take up spiritual life. No, no. Once my children get job, they are married. So in this we go on postponing, thinking that within 2 years, 3 years, one more step, I'll become happy. But it is not going to be like that. Like a child, he goes to the school. When he goes to the school, every day morning he has to go to school. Whole day he has to listen to the teacher. Sometimes shouting, yelling, homework, wear the uniform. Just thinking, this child, when he comes back from school, he sees these colleges. In the colleges, you find the students sometime attend the college, sometimes don't attend the college. Attend the first period, maybe bug the second period. I don't know what is the situation in Colombo, but in India it is like that. Once you go to college, you are a liberated soul. In the school, you need to wear a uniform. In the college, you need not wear a uniform. Rather, if you want, you can go without wearing anything also. I don't know what is the situation now, especially when you go to college in Bombay, you'll find there's some dirt of clothes in the market. They just go with wearing anything and anything and everything. So, then this child is thinking, tomorrow when I go to college, I'll become happy. Because he has so much of restrictions, I have to study this, homework, exams. College, you are free. Somehow passes out of the school and goes to the college. When he goes to the college, first period. So much of halagula going on. So much of noise, mischievous. And the professor is very much fed up. And he takes a lot of pressure in that. Oh, what I could not do in school, I can do in college now. Now he's bugging the class, going to movie. He's so happy. But one day it so happens that his friend gets a motorbike. He buys a motorbike. Because his friend has got a motorbike, he got a girlfriend. He starts thinking, I'm unhappy. I don't have money. Tomorrow, when I get a job, then I'll be happy. I can buy whatever I want. He continues his college life with great suffering. He goes for shopping, only for window shopping. And thinking, making a list, these are the things which I'm going to buy. This kind of thing I am going to have after I pass out from the college. When I get a job, I will be happy. So somehow or other he works hard in the college, he passes out and he gets good marks and he's selected and in the interview also he does very well, he gets a very good job and he gets the first salary. He is so happy when he got the first salary. He's at the top of the world. He gives some gifts to his parents and friends. Whatever he wanted to buy, he bought. And he thought, next month also I'm going to get this much of salary. So he buys something on EMI. Somehow, 6 months of training goes. Training is from 8 to 5 every day. Now, his package has increased because now he's got a permanent job after training. Now in the morning, 8 or 9 o'clock, he goes to the office and 6 o'clock, he's out of the office. He's about to go out of the office, boss calls him. He says, why don't you do this work? And he says, now office hours are over, 6 o'clock, tomorrow I'll do. Then this boss says that, yes, work has got over now. That is for Sri Lankan timings, but you have to work for American timings now in the call center. Now, fixed time to go. There's no fixed time to come out of the office. So much of responsibility, so much of anxiety. Now, he starts thinking, I'm suffering like anything. I have money, but no time to spend money. One Sunday I get. That is the day I have to make up my sleep for all the 7 days. He's suffering like anything. At that time, when he got money, he wrote this some special problem. What is that? All his relatives and friends who loved him the most, who cared him for the most, they start expecting, oh, you are earning so much, why didn't you give me this much money? You give me this much? Now the love has transformed into expectation. Then he starts feeling, everybody wants me, I should do something for them. Actually, nobody is doing it, thinking about me. Nobody is thinking about me. Now I'll be happy when I get the love of my life. Nobody loves me. I have money. And I have intelligence. I am well respected in my work, everything. But when I get the love of my life, I will be happy. He is searching out who really loves me. And somehow after seeing 3, 4 or me, I don't know. Somehow he lands up in getting married to someone with great expectations. Tomorrow when I get married, I'll be happy. Like this boy, when he was in school, what was he thinking? Tomorrow when I go to college, I'll be happy. When college, what he started thinking? When I get a job, I'll be happy. When I get money, I'll be happy. When he got the money and the job, what is he thinking? Tomorrow when I get married, I'll be happy. Well, once he got married, there's one change. What was that change? It's very interesting to see that. When he was in school, at least he had the hope. What is the hope? When I go to college, I'll be happy. In college, he had the hope. When I get job, I'll be happy. In job also, he had a hope. Tomorrow, when I get married, I'll be happy. The change was after getting married, he lost that hope. Anyhow, so this is called the donkey life. One step ahead, I get the carrot. Just few more days, few more months, I'll be happy. That is why we need to inquire about the cause of suffering, rather thinking of how we can be happy. When you know the cause of suffering, immediately you can go and find out how to get rid of the suffering. And happiness manifests automatically. So now, we just said, these are the two primary inquiries in life. Number one, what is the goal of life and the cause of suffering? Now, since we got these two inquiries, when you inquire, what happens? You get knowledge. Knowledge is revealed only to an inquisitive person. What is happening these days in schools and colleges is that the knowledge is injected, information is given. That is why the basic system of education is that a student comes and inquires. When he inquires, it indicates two things. One is, he really wants to know. Number two, he is very specific about what he wants to know. Then, the knowledge is revealed. Otherwise, he just sits The teacher comes and goes on blah 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 and goes away. What happens? All the students will get some information but not knowledge. The procedure of attaining knowledge is to inquiry. So what to inquire? Now we should know where to inquire from. Can we ask these questions to some Time magazine or some other magazine here and there? No. Whom we should go and inquire from? For that we should know. There are three sources of knowledge. According to Vedic literature, there are three sources of knowledge. Number one is Pratyaksha Praman. In simple words, in English, we say it as the knowledge attained by sensory perception. I see, I believe. Pratyaksha Praman. Perception, knowledge of perception. I see and believe. That means I get knowledge through my senses. That is known as Pratyaksha Praman. But there is some problem. In the Pratyaksha Praman, the knowledge what we get is always defective. The present day, whatever knowledge is being printed in the textbooks, whatever is being studied by all our children in schools and colleges, even the knowledge what you get through the newspapers and the TV, everything has defects. You know why? Because they are all based on sense perception. And the senses by themselves are defective. There are four defects. The first defect is imperfect senses. Like you see. You can only see into a limited range between the ultraviolet and the infrared. That is the frequency what you can see. Beyond ultraviolet and infrared, you cannot perceive anything. Like X-rays. Can you see the X-rays? You cannot see because the eyes are incompetent to see the X-rays. The senses, they are having defects. Because of the defects within the senses, any knowledge gained by the senses will be also defective. The modern science is based on this perception, sense perception. That is why they say, seeing is believing. Until unless we experiment and see, then only we will accept it as science. But the scientific knowledge what we have is as defective as our senses. You may say, why, how can you say like that? Science is progressing. Oh, that itself is a proof that it is not complete. If something is complete, why it should progress? Those who have studied science, even in the school also, you will find. First one scientist came and told, atom is the smallest indivisible substance, Dalton told it. Later on, other scientist comes and says, no, he is wrong, I am right. And he proved, no, atom can be divided inside that there is electron, proton, neutron. Rutherford told that. Later on, some other scientist comes and says, no, he is wrong, I am right. And we are so happy about the development. But the very fact that the development of science proves that the previous science, what was being taught as science, was wrong. 50 years back, the medical textbooks say the brain is an organ to cool the blood. 1950s. Brain is an organ to cool the blood. That was the concept that people had. When we were small children, the teacher used to ask, how many parents are there? We said 9. Now we know there's something else. What does it mean? Every scientist, whenever he points a certain theory, he says, these are the limitations in my theory. Just imagine. The scientist himself says that these are the limitations in my theory. That shows any knowledge gained by our senses, they will be having defects because of imperfect senses, tendency to illusion. The second defect of the senses is illusion. Like you get a glass of water and put a spoon in it. How does it look like? Bent. It's not bent. Because our eyes have a tendency to be illusion. This is the second defect in the eyes. Third defect, commit mistakes. You may be expert. But definitely one day or the other you do mistakes. And even the best of the books, authors, when they publish, after some time, book has been published and given paper. See, these are the mistakes. Please correct it. The fourth defect is cheating. There's so much of cheating propensity in this world, cheating and being cheated, that whatever information or the knowledge is given to you, it has got this propensity to cheat. That is why when somebody wants to cheat you and somebody is getting cheated, they will never get proper knowledge. Cheating is pervading everywhere. Right from the scientific community to everywhere, even when you go to the market to buy something, somebody is trying to cheat you. The vegetable oil will cheat you. He will not give proper quality. If he gives proper quality, proper quantity will not give. Quality and quantity both there, proper price is not there. The biggest cheating industry is advertising industry. Like once I had been to somebody's house, our life member's house. I wanted to meet him, he was busy. And his daughter was sitting watching TV. And I asked her, what do you like the most in the TV? She told that, I like advertisements the most. Because they are more interesting than many of the serials which go on. Then, what is this advertisement all about? You're very peaceful, you're happy and comfortable and satisfied in your home. You switch on the TV, then they say, Naya, new thing has come. You don't have this, your life is useless. You start thinking, yes, my life is useless. And you try to buy that. That is for advertisement, to convince you to buy something which is having no use to you. And they convince you that the most useless thing in your life becomes the most important thing in your life. That is for advertisement. And we consider it to be what I got knowledge. So wherever you go, whatever knowledge is being perceived by sensory perception, that will be having defects. That is why we should not inquire at a source where the knowledge is derived by the senses. The second is known as Anuman Praman. One is Pratyaksha, other one is Anuman Praman. Anuman means what? By intelligence. By logic. I see the sun, it is like football is in size, but I use my intelligence. See, it is very far away from the earth, that is why it is looking like so small. Otherwise it is bigger than the earth. But this Anuman Praman, inferential knowledge, that is also defective because the input for the Anuman Praman is Pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means sensory perception. Input for the Anuman Praman is Pratyaksha, that is why Anuman Praman is also defective. Though there may be reduction or defects in Anuman Praman or inferential knowledge, but still it is defective. We will not talk much about it. Because how long are we going to talk about the defective sources of knowledge? There is a third source of knowledge. That is Shabda Praman. And they are the perfect source of knowledge. Because Shabda Praman is not by any human. They are apaurushaya. They are having a source which is beyond human. That is why Shabda Praman is known as apaurushaya. And what are the Shabda Praman? They are the Vedic literatures. The Vedic literatures are the absolute source of knowledge. Whatever inquiry you want to do, you have to inquire at the Vedic literatures. They give you the perfect answers. Why? Because in the Vedic literatures, you don't have these four defects. You may say, how can you say that? You're so bold and rude to say that thing. Apart from Veda, you not get any perfect knowledge anywhere. Yes. There's a proof for it. What is the proof? Till date, nobody has proved a single statement in the Veda to be wrong. Till date. Science has proved some of the statements to be right. But till date, they are not proved to be wrong. They may say, we don't accept it. That is up to you whether to accept or not. But the point is, have you proved it to be wrong? Some months it so happened that I had taken a college program. All like students were there. And everybody liked the class. But one boy was really envious. Take this Bhagavad Gita. And then I told his perfect knowledge. I told the Bhagavad Gita and says, You are telling there is no defect in that. The boy gave the bag to me. Bhagavad the bag to me. Show me one thing which is right in that. Sometimes you find such people. Welcome. We welcome everyone. So I took the Gita and it opened the second chapter and showed him a verse. Where it says, Jatasya hidruva mrityuhu. For a person who is born, death is certain. It was one statement I showed in the Bhagavad Gita which is right. That is what you asked. Now I had to take the Bhagavad Gita to him. Tell me one statement which is wrong. Yeah, it just went off. Till date, nobody has shown a single statement in the Vedic literatures to be wrong. They say we don't accept it. People say, blindly we don't accept. I am very happy. Blindly we should not accept anything. But please remember, blindly don't reject anything also. But many people say, no, we don't accept Gita. Have you read it? No. Why are you blindly rejecting it? It is very good. Don't blindly accept anything. At the same time, if you have the same philosophy applied, don't blindly reject anything. At least read and see. There are so many examples. I'll start with a very important example. Cow dung in the Vedic literatures have been described as the most pure thing in this world. Cow dung. And the same way they say that any stool of any animal, including human, they are inauspicious, they are dirty. The cow dung is used to purify even the places of altar where you do puja. At that time also cow dung is used. At the time when the Veda was written by Vyasa, 5000 years back, at that time there were no chemical laboratories. But now the scientists took the cow dung and proved, even everybody knows that, proved that this cow dung has the most antiseptic qualities, and they brought the chemical analysis of it and they made a whole big book out of it to prove that how cow dung is very auspicious, is very, very, is antiseptic. Now tell me, how could the Vedic literature state the same statement with the science is proving it right to be now? Is it that they are researched and then did it? No. The Vedas are the word of God. That is why they are 100% perfect. There are no amendments in the Vedic literatures. The different countries, they have constitutions, their amendments. The science, different statements in the science, they are changing every day. Even the constants change. Those who have studied some science and mathematics, physics, you must be knowing something called Planck's constant. This is named as Planck's constant. When Planck, he made this constant and gave it, from that time onwards, it has undergone more than 400 changes. Now people are surprised, is it Planck's constant or Planck's variable? But till date, in the Veda, there is no amendment. Why? Because they are the perfect source of knowledge. There is no any defect in the Vedic literatures. The Vedic literatures talk about predictions. It talks about the prediction of Buddha. 5000 years back, Veda is written. Buddha appeared 2500 years back. You find these predictions are there. Jesus and Muhammad are predicted in the Bhavishya Puran, which was written by Vyasa 5000 years back. Chanakya, Ashoka, all these kings are predicted. They would appear. What about that? Science. People say, oh, in the primitive Vedic people, they were thinking, earth is flat. Earth is flat is not a Vedic concept. Because in the same way that it talks about Bhugola, it is round in shape. Earth was flat was a Western concept. But now, the Nobel Prize goes to somebody else. Plants are life. The Vedas assert that the plants are life. But now, a couple of hundred years back, somebody finds it, the plants are life, and Nobel Prize goes to somebody else. if at all you're giving prizes for Nobel prizes or any prizes for these things, you should give it to Vyasa. Because he had already stated all these things, just because the chemical equations are not there. Why? Ultimately you're interested in the analysis, isn't it? Why all the chemical equations? Suppose somebody gives you water, you drink it, isn't it? You think it is H2O and drink. Foolishness, drink, huh? Saradrahi, be interested in the essence. All the chemical equations, you come down and ultimately you mess up with the entire thing. It should be only H2O. If you just drink H2O, you will die. There are so many other things which is making it drinkable. If you just put oxygen and hydrogen put together and give it to you, you will burn. The entire intestines will burn. It's a fact. Just because there are so many other minerals, you are able to drink it. So anyhow, we will not go into the subject. Point is here. Vedas are the perfect source of knowledge. Now, the question arises, okay, Vedas are the perfect source of knowledge, they accept it. The absolute truth is mentioned in the Vedic literatures. How to read them? Everybody should know something about Vedas. Originally, these Vedic literatures were only one, Yajus. But 5,000 years back, Vyasa appeared. He knew that in the age of Kali, you all know that this Kali Yuga which is going on, Satya Treta Dwapara Kali, Kali Yuga 2000 years, out of which 5000 years have passed. Double of it, that is 864,000 years is Dwapara Yuga, and double of three times of Kali Yuga, that is 1296,000 years is Treta Yuga, and four times of Kali Yuga, that is 1728,000 years is Satya Yuga. You put all the four yugas together, 1,40,320,000 years is the entire duration of one cycle. In that, now at present we are in Satya Yuga, in Kali Yuga. 5,000 years have passed in Kali Yuga. Just Kali Yuga is about to start. At that time, Vyasa, he knew in the age of Kali, people's memory will be short. Before the age of Kali, in the previous ages, people had such a sharp intelligence and memory, just by hearing once they could remember. That is why no requirement of making notes. Just by hearing they could remember. That is why the Vedas, they are known as Shruti. So just by hearing they could memorize. And the Shruti, Vyasa knew, in the age of Kali, it need to be put into writing. That is why Vyasa did not write the Veda. Vyasa, he put the Vedic literatures in written format. He edited the Vedic literatures and made into sections. Rig Veda, Athar Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Veda. Four Vedas were made by Vyasa. He made sections and he made different chapters out of it. In this way, four Vedas were made by Vyasa. Now, Vyasa, when he made these Vedic literatures, he made present in a very systematic way. How? In the entire of the four Vedas, there are 1,130 chapters. Entire all the four Vedas. And each chapter has four sections. The Brahmanakas, Aranyakas, Samhitas and Upanishads. That means there are 1,130 Brahmanakas, 1,130 Aranyakas, 1,130 Samhitas and 1,130 Upanishads. This is how the whole Vedic literatures were put into writing by Vyasa. But what happened is, if somebody wants to study them, you cannot study because only 6% of them are left now today. 94% has been destroyed because of different invasions, the Mughals, and different circumstances which has happened in the entire land. Because at that time, even Sri Lanka was part of Bharatavarsha. The British has divided that. So entire land, so many disturbances happened. The Vedic literatures were lost. 6% was only left. See, if you want to study the entire Veda, you can do it. You cannot do it. You say, no, I want to study 6%, then that also you cannot do. Because to study those 6% Vedic literatures, you need to have the knowledge of Vedic Sanskrit. What is being taught, this is only Prakrita. It is only Puranika. Puranika, Prakrita. There are two kinds of Sanskrit which is being taught these days. Vedic Sanskrit, nobody knows. So even if you want to study the 6%, it is impossible. No, I want to study, you will try to do. Your lifetime is not enough to even to study 6%. Just imagine. Then what to do then? That is the reason. Krishna, at the beginning of the age of Kali, at the end of Dwapara, he took all the Vedic literatures and he summarized the entire Vedic literatures into one book called Bhagavad Gita. 700 verses only. Lakh verses of Vedic literatures are condensed into 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita. And if somebody studies Bhagavad Gita, they don't have to study any other part of Vedic literatures because everything is put in this one book called Bhagavad Gita. And especially in the Vedic literatures, there are two kinds of knowledge given. One kind of knowledge is how to live in this world. Another kind of knowledge is how to get out of this world. Like, I don't know what is the most prestigious engineering institute in Sri Lanka. Maybe Institute of Technology of Colombo or whatever it is. Maybe in India you have this IIT, Indian Institute of Technology. Young boy gets an admission into this college. Most prestigious college. And he's so happy. He says, I have achieved the goal of life of getting into this college. Since this is the topmost college, year after year, I would like to stay in this college only till my death. It's foolishness. Though it may be the topmost college, the purpose of getting into the college is what? To get out of it. In the same way, though you may have the best of the facilities in this life, the purpose of getting a human life, purpose of getting into this world is to get out of this world. It is not just to stay in this world, life after life. It is foolishness. Though it may be very comfortable, though it may be the topmost position you may have achieved in this world, but the purpose is not to stay in that position. Though you have achieved a particular situation or a place, that is not the purpose. The purpose is to get out. That is why the Veda talks about two things. Number one, what? How to live in this world. It is truly required. Number two, how to get out of this world. In the Brahmanagas, Aranyagas, and the Samhitas, the Vedas talk about how to live in this world. That is why in the Vedic literatures, all branches of knowledge are there. You name it. Construction, civil engineering, architecture, physics, chemistry, mathematics, politics, economics, commerce, every aspect of knowledge is there in the Vedic literatures. No knowledge is beyond the scope of Vedas. Whatever you find these days being presented as knowledge is only some perverted reflection of the original knowledge in the Vedic literatures. At that time, like somebody, I don't want to get into politics, but the point is, somebody told, going to a commentary, that, oh, Ram built a bridge, which college he passed out from. Somebody commented, I don't know whose name it is. But the point is, there are so many huge temples. At that time, your engineering colleges were not there. And these days, big professors, they go and study those temples. How did they build that? It is common sense. The Veda gives all kinds of knowledge. People come all around the world to Kerala and sometimes even to Sri Lanka just to get Ayurvedic treatment. The Veda is there. Dharurveda, Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda. So, all kinds of knowledge, even material knowledge. Some people think, oh, Veda is something abstract. No, it talks about material knowledge. But that is not the most important part of the Veda. The most important part of the Veda is to get out of this world. Spiritual knowledge means that knowledge which helps you to get out of this world. And that is there in the Upanishads. The Upanishads talk about how to get out of this world. One is material knowledge, which helps us how to live in this world. And the purpose of life is to get out of this world. That is mentioned in the Upanishads. Now in the Upanishads, what Krishna has done, he has taken all the Upanishads and extracted the essence of the Upanishads and then gave us this one book called Bhagavad Gita. The most important part of the Veda, Upanishads, the knowledge is extracted and gave it to us in the form of Bhagavad Gita. That is why Sri Pada Shankaracharya says, Sarvopanishado gavo dukta gopalandana bhakto vatsa sudit bhokta duktam gita amrutam mahat. He compares all the Upanishads with the cow. What is the essence of cow? Milk. And who milked the cow? It's Krishna, Gopalandana. Partho Vatsa, the first person to drink the milk is a calf. So Arjuna is compared to the calf. So what did Arjuna do? He drank that milk which is nectar. Gitamritam Mahat. That was done by Arjuna. And who relishes this nectar? Partho Vatsaha Sudhir Bhokta. Sudhihi was got purified intelligence. Only they can understand this Bhagavad Gita. They relish this Bhagavad Gita. That is why Shri Pashankaracharya further says, Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gita. Let there be just one scripture that's enough, which is spoken by Krishna. That is enough to guide the entire population of the world. And it has got the solution to all the problems in this world. Let there be just one scripture. Now somehow, we came to the understanding that Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedic literatures, which are the most important part of the Vedas, Upanishads. And Upanishads are extracted in this one book called Bhagavad Gita. Now it takes some time about how to understand Bhagavad Gita. This is the last topic for today, and then we can have question answers. Okay, I understood. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedic literatures. If I had this book, no other book is required. I understood it. Now, I went to a shop to buy a copy of Bhagavad Gita and asked the shopkeeper, I want a Gita. Then he says, which Gita you want? So I want the Gita which Krishna told to Arjuna. Ah, that's okay, which one you want? Now I want the Gita which Krishna spoke to Arjuna. Then shopkeeper says, that is okay, but there are so many people who have given commentaries on that. Which one you want? Then you're confused. And I ask, what should I do now? For that you should keep it in mind. That though Bhagavad Gita is one, many people have given their own commentaries. But which one to study? For that you should understand. Bhagavad Gita is a book of devotion. So it can be understood and explained only by a devotee of Krishna and nobody else. Though they may have given commentary, that may not be the commentary which is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. To give you a simple example, you have a temple. Especially in South India, huge temples are there. Now, a beggar, he sees the temple and says, wow, nice place for my business. He's looking at the same temple and he's thinking, this is a place I can sit and then get my begging. Anyhow, pious people come, they'll give me a few rupees. Long distance, somebody is traveling, walking, he sees the temple, oh, common place, nice place I can take rest. After some time, a civil engineer comes, sees, oh, what a construction. They built it 1,000 years back and still it is as it is. I built a bridge 2 years back, it's gone. Now what is strong construction? An architect comes, he's amazed. What an architecture, just see. Granite stone is carved like a chain. After some time, a devotee comes. He goes into the temple, worships the Lord. All the five people, they saw the same temple. But who saw it? The beggar, he also saw the same temple. But he understood the temple according to his own consciousness. architect also saw the same temple. A tired traveler also saw the same temple. A civil engineer also saw the same temple. But it was only the devotee who understood what this temple is. In the same way, Bhagavad Gita was also seen by different people. Once I was asked to give a class to college students, and the introduction was going on. Some students were introducing me. She started her introduction saying that, "Friends, we all know Bhagavad Gita is the best book on management." I never knew this. Then everybody said, "Yes, yes, it's best book on management." All the students wrote. Then she started explaining, telling. Then she started talking about me, that how, who am I, why, where I come from, and what is this, ISKCON president, and all these things. And then, after introducing me, say, "Friends, we are very fortunate. Who else, other than Kamal Lochan Das, can explain to us about Bhagavad Gita and management?" And I was thinking, what I should do now? I was supposed to speak on Bhagavad Gita and management. Then I started my class saying that, "Today I came to speak to you and give knowledge, but today I came to know Bhagavad Gita is the best book on management." I was not knowing this. So a management student would think Bhagavad Gita is the best book of management. It is true. By taking the principles of Bhagavad Gita, you can become a good manager, no problem. Though the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is not just management. Definitely I give the example of the golden pen. The golden pen can be used for scratching your head to mitigate your itching. That is not the purpose of the pen though. Definitely Bhagavad Gita can be used for some management principles, though the purpose is not entirely so. Now, a politician says, he quotes verses from Bhagavad Gita. Says, "Best book on politics, Bhagavad Gita." Just see, Vichara Arjuna, such a nice person he was. He did not want to have a war. And this Krishna, he brainwashed him. He completely brainwashed him. That is what politicians do, isn't it? Brainwash. Your view is something, you change your view. Best book on politics. Bhagavad Gita is the best book on politics. Somebody says, "Best book on Sanskrit." Definitely by reading Bhagavad Gita you will learn Sanskrit. But Krishna did not tell Arjuna, "Oh my dear Arjuna, this is the best book on Sanskrit. By reading so you get Sanskrit." Somebody is trying to say, "The best book on history is Bhagavad Gita, 5,000 years old." Okay, you keep a newspaper under the earth for 5,000 years, after that you read that, have any value? Yesterday's newspaper don't have any value. So though Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old, but that is not the real glory of Bhagavad Gita. The real glory of Bhagavad Gita is that it's a book of devotion. It is not a book on politics. It is not a book of some Sanskrit, of language. It is not a book of management. Though these purposes can be solved through Bhagavad Gita, but the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is devotion to Krishna. Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, "My dear Arjuna, saivaya maya tedya yuga prukta puratana bhaktosi me sakachi rahasyam hitottama." My dear Arjuna, I am speaking this science to you because you are my devotee and you are my friend. That shows Bhagavad Gita cannot be understood by anybody other than a devotee of Krishna. First one should become a devotee of Krishna, then only one can understand Bhagavad Gita. That is why you find there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita being published. But what is that one Bhagavad Gita, edition of Bhagavad Gita, which has transformed millions of people's lives? It is Bhagavad Gita as it is. No other Bhagavad Gita can claim that they have transformed the lives of people, maybe one or two, maybe, but millions, masses have accepted and then came to the point of the purpose of Gita, where Krishna says, Saradharman Pritya Mamekam Sharanamaja, who have become devotees of Krishna after reading Bhagavad Gita, which additional Bhagavad Gita made devotees of Krishna, it is Bhagavad Gita as it is, because it was written by a devotee. That is why we should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna. That is the first qualification of a guru. That he should be a devotee of Krishna, coming under the sampradaya. Like if you want to send your children to some college or school or something like that, then what you do? First you see the professor whom you are sending, he should have a graduation certificate. He should be certified by university. What is that university which teaches Bhagavad Gita? The Krishna has set up 4 universities. They are known as sampradayas. Samyak rupena pradaya. Prakrishya rupena daya. Sam means absolute truth. Pra means prakrishya rupena complete. Daya means to give. The system by which complete knowledge of the absolute truth is given. That is called sampradaya. There are 4 universities set up by Krishna to give the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to all of us. Krishna gave the knowledge to Brahma, Rudra, Shri, Kumara. Brahma, the 4-headed Brahma, creator of this world. Rudra, Lord Shiva. Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. And the 4 Kumaras. The 4 Kumaras are the Manasaputras of Brahma. They are the vice chancellors of these 4 universities. And from there, the knowledge comes down according to the Guru Shishya Parampara. Then Brahma gave the knowledge to Narada, Narada gave Vyasa, Vyasa to Madhva. In this way, International Society for Krishna Consciousness seems to be a very modernized name with very kind of modern management techniques and computers and projectors and so many different things. But the founder actually of this movement is related to Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Whatever Krishna had told to Brahma, the same thing you are getting now today through Srila Prabhupada and his disciples and through all his devotees. That is why there is no distortion. When there is no distortion, the purity is there. That is why the effect is there. The first qualification of Guru is that he is a devotee of Krishna in one of the bona fide sampradayas. This is the first qualification of the teacher of Bhagavad Gita. The second qualification. Guru means heavy. Heavy means heavy with knowledge. We say Guru means teacher. Actually, Guru doesn't mean teacher. Guru means one who is heavy. Gurutva, bhara, means heaviness. So one who is heavy with scriptural knowledge, spiritual knowledge, he is called Guru. Not that he just goes on blessing people. People like that Guru who blesses, isn't it? But will you send your child to a teacher who just blesses and sends them back? Mother asks the child, what did you learn today? Oh, my teacher is so good. Why? She blesses me. Doesn't teach anything. What is the use of such teacher? So Guru means who is heavy spiritual knowledge. That's number 2. Third one, Guru is Acharya. One who teaches by example. Srila Prabhupada, he taught by example. It is not that, okay, just during the sermon I am Guru and my private life is different. Don't intervene into my private life. Teacher means there is no private life. Whatever he speaks, he should practice on whatever he has spoken. Teach by your practice. Acharati iti acharyaha. The third qualification. The fourth qualification is his senses should be controlled. Vacho vegam, manasakrot vegam, jivha vegam, udalopasta vegam, etan vegan yo vishaheta diraha. Sarva vipimyam, prathvim sashishyat. You can make disciples around the world who has control over his senses. Not that you can do anything. Here I don't know how many, really, it's not much, but especially in India you'll find there's some rules. You do whatever you want. Let me do whatever I want. Just become my disciple, that's all. You can do anything, and I let me also do anything, and we attain spiritual realization. Until unless senses are controlled, there can be no spirituality. So these are the 4 qualifications of a spiritual master. or a teacher of Bhagavad Gita. We are speaking so much about teacher, let us talk about student also. The first quality of the student of Bhagavad Gita is he should be inquisitive. Once I was in a temple, beloved temple in Bombay, near. There was one person was waiting for me, meet me. But I was quite busy. After some time, when I was got free, he came to me and he paid obeisances, fell flat, and he stood up. And he told, "Swamiji," extend his hand, showed me, "Swamiji, I have a lot of problem." And then I looked at the hand. I told him, "Yes, yes, serious problem." Then he told, "Please tell me." I told, "You are going to die one day." That much I know. Other things I don't know. Then he was not understanding whether to laugh, whether to cry. I told, "This is not the purpose for you to, for purpose of you coming to me to show your hand. The purpose should be to inquire what is the goal of life." So people are interested in blessings. The real blessing of a spiritual master is, of a guru is, what he speaks. The knowledge given is a real blessing. That is why a student of Bhagavad Gita should be a seeker of truth. He should be inquisitive, should inquire, should actually make the teacher frustrated out of your inquiries. That is a real qualification. And other three qualifications of the student, they are that they should be having humility, service attitude, and should be a devotee of Krishna. These are the four qualifications of a disciple. Now, in the next few days, we will be talking about the subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita. Today we introduced what Bhagavad Gita is. First we spoke about how it is the inquisitiveness which you have that qualified you to be humans. What are the two inquiries? Goal of life, cause of suffering. Where we enter the Vedic literatures, because Pratyaksha Praman, Anuman Praman, the knowledge gained by the sensual perception will not lead you to perfect knowledge. That is why perfect knowledge can be gained only by Vedic literatures. Vedas are so huge and not all available. That is why Krishna, he took the most important part of the Vedic literatures, the Bhagavad Gita, of the Upanishads, and then condensed and gave a book called Bhagavad Gita. And we understood how Bhagavad Gita should be understood by approaching a teacher who has got four qualifications. Primarily should be a devotee, and the student should be inquisitive. What is there in the Gita? Five subjects. Ishvara Jiva Prakriti Kala Karma. Ishvara means God. Prakriti means, Jiva means living entity, who we are. The third subject is Prakriti, material nature, the world, how it is conducted. Number four, Kala, time. Five, karma. These are the five subject matters. Out of which, tomorrow we will be dealing the second subject matter, that is Jiva, who am I? A little technical. So those of you who would like to bring your friends, tomorrow we can bring, but third day onwards, no more new entries, because they will be asking some questions based on the previous two days. So these are the five subject matters. Tomorrow we will be dealing about Jiva, the living entities. And as we last stop exactly at 9, we have 13 minutes for question answers. One thing, during these 7 days, whatever I am going to speak is not important. Is not as important as much as what you are going to ask. Officially, 13 minutes are there. Those who would like to go, after that, you can leave. And we can continue questions afterwards also. So, as I have told, we are qualified to be humans because we are having the spirit to inquire. Please do inquire. Hare Krishna.
This is the first time that I'm in a forum or a session like this.
Okay.
Though my children do go for some classes along with them.
Okay.
One of the prime reasons why I was talking to my friend while we were traveling today.
Okay.
We were talking about the purpose of life.
Yes.
And midlife crisis is what we were talking about.
Yes.
So there's a lot of reflection from what you spoke, which actually spoke to us. So
okay.
It was the point of inquisitiveness is surely there.
Yeah.
But the question still remains as to why specifically in the Hindu culture the cascading of this knowledge has not happened as prevalent as that of any other religion like Christianity or any other religion for that matter, where it is not part of our way of life. for Hindus. Today we are largely disconnected. I mean, I'm 40 right now, but I'm quite disconnected about what is actually in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
So at least better late than never.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So first thing is, Bhagavad Gita is not just a Hindu literature, number one. Just because most Hindus revere Bhagavad Gita, that doesn't restrict Bhagavad Gita to Hindus. Hinduism is religion, Buddhism is religion, Christianity is religion, Islam is religion. And somebody can become a Hindu, can become a Christian, Christian can become a Muslim, Muslim can become a Christian, they can change. But the principles of science, spiritual science, don't change. Bhagavad Gita is a science. Like in a school, you have Hindu, you have a Christian, you have a Muslim. You have so many other religions. Some people just don't bother about religion. But everybody has to study the same mathematics. 2 plus 2 is 4 for everyone. So Bhagavad Gita is beyond religion. That is why at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Give up all kinds of religion, surrender to me. So, just we have this concept that, oh, Bhagavad Gita is for Hindus. It is not so. It is something beyond religion. Just because many Hindus revere it, this concept has come. There is nothing wrong in thinking like that. Just because many believers. But that is why you find in the International Center for Krishna Consciousness, Khan, many Christians, many Islam. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to the West, in a big auditorium, somebody asked, what do you think about Jesus? And Srila Prabhupada told, Jesus is our teacher. But the unfortunate situation is, we are not following what teachers are told. That is the problem. So now, since your concern is about the spreading of the Bhagavad Gita, it does not happen to the extent of any other religion is happening. The core spreading of religious principles is based on teachings, not based on any superficial acceptance. Okay, superficially somebody says, I am a Christian, but have you studied Bible? I don't know. So the principle is study, knowledge. It is not just some ism. ISKCON is trying to do its best. Just take part in it. Like you brought your friend. Just imagine everybody here brings one more friend. How much difference does it make to the world? If it doesn't make difference to the world, at least makes a difference to your friend. Okay, even if it doesn't make a difference to your friend, it definitely makes a difference to me. Like you told, I become more inquisitive. Good. Okay, thank you. Any more questions?
The friend that he was talking about. Yeah. First of all, thank you very much for sharing what you shared. My question is that I tried reading Bhagavad Gita with a book I purchased. That was, I think, when I was 13 or 14.
Okay.
It didn't make any sense to me at that time.
Yeah.
So my question is, because what I remember is that why is it written in such a roundabout manner? Okay. You can't make sense of it directly.
Very good.
So maybe if you can throw light on that.
Next question. Uh-huh. If the government wants to give education to the children, they can just print textbooks, not have schools and teachers. Study come and give the exam, but they still have a school and they have a teacher. So when ordinary education like mathematics, physics, it requires, though after having a textbook, a school and a teacher, don't you think Bhagavad Gita requires? Yes. That is why you require an institution, you require a teacher. So, the first purpose of ISKCON is to systematically propagate the science of Krishna consciousness based on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So, the institution, the school, Prabhupada identified ISKCON temples to be universities. And you have teachers, many teachers. When you sit with a teacher and learn it, then it is not roundabout, it is straight. When we don't sit with the teacher, then definitely it's roundabout. Isn't it? So, it's an opportunity. Like today you attended one class. at least some concepts are clear. Like you attend the 7 days class, some concepts will be more clear. When you sit with the teacher and learn, then after that also, we are going to have classes after that also. In local centers, have many, many classes going on in different places. So when you join those classes, the concepts will be more clear. So join them.
Right through our life, even our elders always tell us, you should have a life goal and you have a purpose to live.
Yeah.
Always we keep hearing about all these things, but we keep ignoring it. Yeah. But today when you give a different perception to the entire goal and the purpose of life, I want to understand when we should start actually giving this focus and this goal of purpose of life to our children.
Nice question. Mm-hmm. To our children. But it should be given. The same thing, same knowledge should be given according to the taste of the person. That is the expertise of the teacher. For children, you give the same thing in a different way. For young teenagers, you give it in a different way. For married couples, you give it in a different way. For elderly people, you give it in a different way. But the subject is the same, like the medicine. The same medicine, when the doctor gives to the child, he gives it in a different way. For a person with different symptoms, they give it in a different way. Somebody has got allergy, give it in a different way. Medicine is the same. Now, your question is how to give to the children. How to give to the children? You are asking the right person because I deal with a lot of children. For that, you should become a child. Whenever I take a seminar for the teachers who are teaching children, most emphasis on this is on this. To teach a child, you should be a child. You cannot teach a child if you are a teacher. If you are a child, that means the child will relate to you. When you have that relationship, it is very easy to transfer. Not just easy, it is automatic. In the Vedic system, the teacher and the student relationship is the most important thing. Once the relationship is very strong, you don't have to impart. Knowledge is automatically transferred. They will try to imitate what you are doing in this way. So it's an art which it needs to be developed. So for that you need to be a child. You have to sit with the child. You sit with the child. Unfortunately, these days, the mothers don't spend time with the children because of the city life. If you spend time with the child, then you'll get it. The child will get it, definitely. Big subject, but in essence, I'm telling this to you. I'm very happy that you are concerned for it. Very wonderful. Any more questions?
Said that we have to become a devotee of Krishna. How to become a devotee of Krishna?
Oh. I don't have to take 7 days course, I suppose, in Sri Lanka. One day is enough. last day we are going to talk about it. The practical application of Bhagavad Gita. Like these 6 days before, tomorrow we will talk about soul. 2 days, that is the third and the fourth day we will talk about God. The fifth and the sixth day we will talk about Prakriti, Kala and Dharma. The seventh day is meant for practical application of Bhagavad Gita in our life, that is how to become a devotee. Since you asked this question in the first day itself, I don't want to keep you in suspense. The short way of becoming a devotee of Krishna is to chant the names of Krishna. You can start practicing from today. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then Bhagavad Gita becomes like a sun, as bright as a sun in front of you. Okay. Last question, and then we'll have casual talk. Okay.
Thanks Guruji for enlightening us with your one basic question. I am from India. We talk about Hindu as a religion. Who is the God in Hindu religion? Is it Krishna, Shiva? We have different gods.
Okay.
And in your discourse you mentioned that Shiva was one of the person who got enlightened from Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
On the Veda. Mm-hmm. So if that is the case, why we all in India have this issue of, I think that's one of the major reasons. Compared to other religions like Hinduism, sorry, Christianity or Islam, they follow one.
Yeah, that's question.
So that's always a big disconnect in what societies like ISKCON or Shimla missions, all these missions teach to people like us.
Okay. If you can hold your question for day 3 and 4, it will be nice. Because the subject is going to come. But since you asked, God is only one. How can only one? But that one God manages the entire world through his agents, assistants. So they are known as Devi Devatas. So with regarding whom, we'll have a clear concept after knowing who is God. Just by saying, oh, he is God, that is not. What is the definition of God? That is, we know. We'll be knowing this thing in a very elaborate way for 2 days. That is, day after tomorrow, the third day and the fourth day. So if you can hold your question for that, it will be nice. So thank you very much. You stop here.